is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Second half, Monday, and what a week we've got on tap. It is the start of the sale season. Of course, we got horses racing age today, but the yearlings tomorrow and Wednesday. We've got opening day at Saratoga Thursday. We've got Del Mar on tap. We've got the Haskell on Saturday. And so this is going to be a... You got to have the dancing shoes on, Rich Migliori. At least I do. You can focus on New York, but we'll be at Saratoga Thursday for opening day, and then we'll broadcast on Haskell Eve from Oceanport. Good morning.
Good morning. So you're heading down to the shore.
I can't miss the shore. The shores graded all. Let's use all the Monmouth nicknames and taglines. The shore's greatest stretch, fast times on the Jersey Shore. What else? What else we got?
Oh, I don't know. But no, you just got me tired of all that's coming up.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, We got to take it one step at a time, but no, it's I'll be up in Saratoga Wednesday. Stop on the way to my man Dominic the barber. He's on Albany Shaker Road. I go there at least every other week to get my hair cut because I have the worst calyx in the world, and that's cute when you're 10, not so cute when you're in your 50s and doing television. And he's the only person I've ever had be able to cut my hair and manage my calyx. So even like all winter long, I go see Dominic, and he is the best. He says, "You got a summer head of hair."
And you know, as opposed to a lot of riders, you know, that like hockey players, you know, with the helmet, it seems to have a tendency to, you know, to do damage, and to see a lot of bald riders and bald hockey players, but you've kept your locks.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it too much. I might think to myself, but my brothers are all either bald or balding, so I don't know. I guess just fortunate. I think it's all the hiking I do. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to know. It's what they say. It's your grandfather determines, right? Your mother's father.
Well, I will say this: he had some head of hair. Man,
there you go.
His whole life. Yeah,
there you go.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't even know that. But
yeah, it's your mother. It comes from your mother's. Typically, the mother's father will determine.
I'm going to get the haircut on the way up. I'll get to Saratoga around noon. We've got a 2 o'clock meeting for Saratoga Live, and then I'm on Thursday, Friday, and then I'm not on again, I think, till Alabama Day. But at least I'll be there for opening day and probably stay through the weekend.
Well, and as we talked, you got those inspirational conversations that you're going to be doing, and you'll be on hand at other junctures too, right? I mean,
I'll be around. Obviously around the sales, and then the talks that we have scheduled, which we're still working out some details. I'll let you know full itinerary of that. And Monday we've got that thing to benefit the racetrack chaplaincy with Angel Cordero, George Velasquez, Chris McCarron, Lafitte Pinkeye, and myself. I believe Tom Durkin's moderating it, and that should be a fun time. Just us talking, different racetrack stories and experiences, and I think there's a cocktail reception after, so I'm not sure. I think if you go to the racetrack chaplaincy, I think you can Google it. There's a link to how you can get tickets for it. It should be a good time. There should be some very funny, entertaining stories as well.
Well, and I've got it in my lap. And I wasn't sure. I got a mailing originally, and they're calling it Champions Talk. And the first mailing I got, Rich, was for August 11th. And then came a second one for the 19th, for next Monday, a week from today. So I don't know. Did they cancel the second one or just move this up? Is that what happened?
I honestly don't know, Steve. They,
okay. I sent a text to
maybe
Nick.
They're having two. Maybe they're having one that we're training.
I'll find out.
Yeah, I'm not sure because they I was contacted. Terry Finley and Ramon Dominguez reached out to me if I'd be interested in doing it. And when they first reached out, you know, and you got the four Hall of Famers, I went, oh, so you guys want me to moderate, you know, the panel? And they're like, no, we want you on the panel. So I kind of laugh out of that.
Well, and I'll give details again, and I'll send a link too. But it is, you know, for those that don't have the name, it's the Racetrack Chaplaincy, RTCANY, Racetrack Chaplaincy, New York. And you've got, obviously a really fun afternoon, 3 o'clock, and, the array of sponsors and, those that have made it possible, to Honors, IRAD, and Angel, Chris McCarron, Rich Migliori, George Velasquez, and Lafitte Benkai Jr. It's pretty neat roundtable discussion with Tom Durkin. So I'll send links out. And there's actually, for those that want to donate, I've talked about the chaplaincy over the years quite a bit. Anything you do, any kind of donation, certainly goes a long way, including for the food pantry and general fund. They do a tremendous, tremendous job. Humberto Chavez and Nick Karras and everybody, the work they do is amazing. The racing office did some nice work, Rich, to put together these first two cards. What's your early impression of days one and two?
Well, I just love seeing all the full fields. I mean, it's really, it always offers value. You look for horses that, I've always been, my experience, you see a lot of long shots win early in a meeting, just different surface, different, styles of things. Horses that do well when they get up there. So with the full fields, you're looking at potential, big payoffs, and it's so competitive. It's just so good. I'm excited. I'm excited. I think it's going to be a great meet. The fact that, we got fans back, full capacity. You think about how eerie it was last year, how strange it was. I walk in there, no traffic to get in, walk into the track, go do the shows, but horses would go by us and you could hear the riders hollering at each other, and everything was so clear because it was so quiet. And Saratoga is not supposed to be quiet, in the off season, yes, not during the racing season. I'm excited, and I have a lot of friends that live in Saratoga, and just talking with them, their enthusiasm to have it back, it's such a way of life for them. It's such, has such an economic impact on the community that you feel the anticipation even more than normal. I always say opening day of Saratoga is always like Christmas morning. Well, this year it's like 10 Christmas mornings. It's really, really, the anticipation is palpable.
Oh, there's no doubt. And, you just look at the way the cards, the way they're structured, and one thing that they do, which it's both fun and at the same time, because of the level that was necessary, the meet starts on Thursday with a mile and an eighth race, so that the horses are right in front of the stands, and everybody gets a chance to, I don't know when, if that became a tradition at some point, but it is kind of a fun way to start the season. So we start with a claiming group, but the 2-year-old maidens particularly, I think, is what gets people excited. And you got the open company fillies that start things in the fifth. You look at the few at the three stakes so far. The Schuylerville seems like a nice group, and Happy Soul from Wesley Ward certainly going to be the likely the likely heavy favorite, but I just had Mark Cassie, Norm Cassie shows up with that pretty birdie of Mary Lou's. It's going to be hard not to say, that it's Mary Lou's, Mary Lou Whitney Stables, of course, with Mary Lou gone and John Hendrickson moving forward. You know, there's that horse of Butchie Reed's, Mainstay, the Astern, that won smashingly at Monmouth in the slop. And I suppose, Rich, this is as good a time as any to acknowledge that the forecast here for the first few days does not look fabulous, to say the least. We've already had what you might consider a wet summer, but that feels like it's going to continue a little bit.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the forecast doesn't look good. I don't know, excuse me, what happened up there this morning, but we got a deluge.
Yeah, we got pounded. Yep.
Yeah.
We got pounded. Yep.
So, because it's just so funny. Like, it's 100 miles from my house to Saratoga, 100 miles from my house to Belmont, and it could be sunny there, and we're getting crushed here. When we lost power two or three times over the past few weeks, I mean, I have a generator, but... lightning hit by the front of the property, started a brush fire last week. It's just been like very, very volatile weather. But yeah, I mean, listen, I'm looking at the past performances now. I just pulled them up on my iPad. Mainstay, the way she won, to put separation going 4.5 furlongs like she did and do it in the style she did. And then look at her work tab. Butch Reed's not a guy who's looking for horses to break the track record every time they work. Excuse me, but they're like, June 23rd, 45-3. On July 3rd, 58-3. This is a 2-year-old filly doing this. So she must be, doing it just because she's that talented. Was Tony Black say, not how fast you're going, how you're going fast. So as much as I've been incredibly impressed with Happy Soul, daughter of Run Happy, who... Even her first start, 12 lengths back to the third horse, she was beaten by a colt, her stablemate, Nakatomi. And then she's just galloped against, fillies at Belmont. I mean, she's just been so impressive, but she might have her hands full. This filly could be spectacular.
There's also an angle that I'll throw in, and I mentioned this actually maybe a month ago. I forget where, probably was at Churchill as they were closing the season. But there's an angle in here that I always am intrigued by at this time of year, and particularly at Saratoga. You've got one horse out of this field, and that's the Tom Amos, Jerry Karum Pipeline Girl, the Air Force Blue filly that won at First Asking, going 3/4. She's the only horse in the field that's gone 6. And I'd have to go back and see. This is why I used to keep all those DRFs, Rich, and keep all the all the things that I could use as resources. It maybe it's anecdotal, and I'd have to go back and really do the research to make this, to create an authentic angle. But it's always seemed to me, in retrospect, that the horses going 6, 6.5 in the middle stakes, the Adirondack and the Saratoga Special, and then in the Spinaway and in the hopeful at the end of the meet, if you've had horses that have already gone 6, already gone 6.5, and then by the time we get to September have already gone 7, I have found that they've had an advantage to the ones that are going from 4.5 or 5 or 5.5 to the 6, etc.
Well, I think it's a fair point. And you look at, Pipeline Girl, she also came from just off the pace. And if you look at the running lines of all these horses, most of them have been in front.
Mm-hmm.
Saucy Lady T broke slowly first time and rallied, and then she stalked the pace but was in the clear in a short field. Queen Camilla, not sure what she was running against, but she came from off the pace, and everybody else has basically been head and head for the lead on the lead. So, just having that ability, it was, I think, a prime example of it yesterday. It was a Bella Sophia and Harp. And the Philly of Clements won so easily first.
You mean okay? I thought you were going to talk about the sprint from Saturday, but you were talking about.
No, the allowance race yesterday. I think it's a good example, and I'm just bad with names, so I'm pulling up the chart. But, you know, she won so easily first time under no pressure, right? She got the gallop to the lead. Now this time she's in there with a filly who can eyeball her, who's just every bit as fast, if not faster. And now she's got to work to be there. And you see the difference when a horse has to, you know, fight for it as opposed to getting it their own way. And Harper's in Charge, who I think is very talented, she just completely faltered. Where Bella Sophia, you know, went on and it was very impressive, and she might have been very tough in the victory ride the way she ran. But it's just such a different thing. You know, I talk about it like, you know, in a boxing terminology that, you know, every fighter can throw a punch, not every fighter can take a punch. And like, to me, that's the prime example of it. So when you start to see them kind of, you know, figure themselves out, sort themselves out, is the ones that can take heat or can take adversity or take kickback, do it in a way that it's not as comfortable for them. And that means, you know, having to defer to a horse that might be faster and pick them up later. All good horses possess speed. It's how they learn to use that speed. And if they're one-dimensional and they've got to fight for the lead every time, you're always going to be, you know, prone to finding another horse, whether they're a contender or not, who can press you, can make you go faster than maybe you want to go to have something left. So, you know, how many times you look at a race and go, well, this horse can't win, but this horse can have a direct impact in how the race ran. So with two-year-olds, the ones that are real quality start to sort themselves out when they show that they don't need the lead or they don't need to dominate to be successful. And that's what when I talk about horses overcoming adversity, sometimes it's subtle adversity, just being able to sit in behind horses, take the kickback, wait for the rider to ask them for their best, those kind of things. And every year with two-year-olds, we see it. I was fortunate that I won the Skylerville for Barry Schwartz with a filly, How About Now, who had broken her maiden at Calder going 4.5 wire to wire. Well, that day, there was just a plethora of speed signed on. We got out-footed. It was sloppy. She took the kickback, and I knew at the 3/8 pole, well, I'm going to get a piece of this. I didn't know if I was going to get there. Because she was brave enough to take the kickback and completely reverse the style of the way she broke her maiden, she rallied down the center of the track. They went like 21-44, and here she came and got up late. And that impresses you when you start to see that quality in a young horse.
Well, and since we went in this direction, I'll mention Bella Sophia, a 94 buyer in this win yesterday, the awesome Patriot daughter, Two Tone Farms bred, Rudy Rod training, and the agglomeration of ownership involved in here, starting with Michael Imperio and Vince Scuderi and more. Obviously, they'll take her, and having scratched out of the victory ride, she'll go in with some momentum herself toward the test, along with Super Sensational. And let's morph into kind of a recap to wrap up Belmont, Rich, and that included, I had Mark Cassie earlier, and that performance was really a breakthrough for Super Sensational. Sets up for a nice test stakes, and there's already, you know, some fillies that are lying in wait, and then we got to talk about the two great ones.
Yeah, Super Sensational. Man, did she live up to her name. That was impressive. It's interesting. Mark kind of backed off her. I was reading some quotes that, you know, you don't have to send a horse back to the farm to give him a break. Just kind of back off him in their training at the racetrack and baby him along. And then for her to deliver this, obviously she developed and changed. And, you know, it was a contested pace. I wouldn't say it was overly fast. The track was pretty glib Saturday. But, you know, Miss Brazil, I really liked going into the race because I thought, you know, breaking through the gate the time before, she could really step forward. Super Sensational just dominated. You knew at the 3/8 pole she was going to win. If you go back and watch the replay, the way she was traveling, you know, I always scan back to a field, especially when I'm involved from a wagering standpoint, and I liked Miss Brazil. And I said, well, let me see how everybody else is traveling. And you scan back to the field, and as soon as you locked on her, you went, well, there's your winner. And she just blew them away. And, you know, we've got to talk about it. Flavien Prat has kind of developed into one of those riders that, you know, you think back years ago, and I'm not trying to compare him to other great riders of other generations. I hate that. So when I say this, it's just to illustrate a point. When Bill Shoemaker would, you know, be called to fly east to ride Forgo, or, you know, some other good horse, Lafitte would get called in to ride Swale, or, you know, some other good horse. Flavien has kind of hit that status where he is a rider that, you know, guys on the East Coast, like, hey, let's, can we get Flavien to come here and ride this? So he's interchangeable. He is, and as comfortable on either coast. He, you know, I talk about riders being chameleons, fitting their horses. Well, it's also fitting their surroundings. He is a chameleon. He blends in wherever he goes, like he belongs there. I just had to bring that up. It reminds me of that period of time when the West Coast riders would be brought east for different occasions. You know, Chris McCarron comes to mind. Flavien's hit that stature.
No, there's no doubt. And everybody that, it's funny, every time he has, you know, successful weekend, I mean, you know, going back to even the Belmont, weekend with domestic spending and some other, you know, he had plenty of other, he's had a bunch of notable stake wins and examples of just how adept he is. And it also includes main track, not just, you know, that whenever these European riders start to have domestic success, the assumption is, oh, they're, you know, they can only do it on turf. You know, it's almost like, you know, it's almost like a auto insult to try to, you know, to try to, not demean, but to, you know, to kind of limit their, you know, their talents. But he's yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's clearly, I mean, you think about the Rombauer victory and, you know, this year, and everybody's impressed. He's got, and maybe this is a cliche, but he seems quiet on a horse, Rich. He seems like somebody that sort of melds into, you know, the horse, you know, the horse kind of comes to him.
Well, but he also very, you know, quietly in a way, always puts horses in a position to win, forward position, finds that spot. It's very reminiscent of Jerry Bailey, and Jerry Bailey's the only rider in my memory. You know, obviously, R. Carroll back in the day, and, you know, before I was even born, but Jerry was the only, like, East Coast rider that would be brought into the West Coast to ride, you know, top quality horses. And you look at Flavien Prat, what he's done on the West Coast. One notable kind of glaring omission to me is, you know, he rides some for Baffert, but he's never been one of Baffert's go-to guys, and he's risen to that stature. Obviously, having Richard Mandela in his corner when he was starting out there gave him instant credibility, right? You know, Mandela says this guy can ride. He can ride. I mean, people underestimate that. You get an opportunity where Chad Brown starts using you, that picks other trainers' heads up. Todd Pletcher using you, other trainers, wow, he's good enough for Todd, good enough for Chad, certainly good enough for me. You know, and frankly, people that don't watch a race as closely as, let's say, you or I do, because it's our living now. We have to, you know, dissect these things and break them down, and we pick up on different things. Guys will just follow the most successful guy's leads, and again, it gives them instant credibility. So, you know, watching it has been pretty impressive. But, yeah, in this game, everybody wants to label somebody. Oh, he's a good turf trainer. Oh, he's a good turf rider. Oh, he's a good front-end rider, not a great closing rider. And then if you start looking through charts, you know, I think I got labeled a little bit as being a front-end rider. If you look at the majority of my biggest wins, I came from nowhere, you know, with a big late run to win. So it's just people's perception. It's not exactly reality.
Well, turn our attention from the sprint race to the, you know, the two grade ones that bracketed the victory ride, and it ended up being the, you know, Santa Barbara, who I think coming in was the one that, you know, would have been a bigger surprise if she lost than had Bolshoi Ballet gotten beat. But the way in which Santa Barbara did it was so flashy, and this Ryan Moore, was I fair in my assessment when I opened the show, saying he was doing some trash talking afterward?
Well, yeah, I didn't catch everything he said, but it basically was like, you know, ours are just a cut above what's here. Am I paraphrasing properly?
Well, he was also throwing the proverbial shade at riders for grabbing a hold and for not utilizing their horse's speed, something that, you know, you and Andy talk about nonstop and with good reason.
Well, hey, listen, I think the perception of riding a speed horse or front runners has so changed. You know, a lot of times when you ride a speed horse, you've got to make it a demanding test. You've got to make it a test of stamina. But you don't, like, again, I've said this on your show, I've said it on America's Day at the Races ad nauseum. You're riding a speed horse. You're in front. Your strategy is to slow the pace down so much that the horses that are closers, the horses with a kick, are in close proximity to you. So in essence, your strategy is to outkick the kicker. How does that make sense? You have to use your horse's speed to almost drag those horses into the race a bit more and spread them out. And I'll never understand, you get a soft first half a mile, you get to the 3/8 pole, you've created an advantage by setting an easy tempo. Go on now. Now let's make it a test. Let's start to kick on. Guys give their advantage back by not taking advantage of the advantage. They go, okay, I've gone 12, 12, 12. Well, let's throw in 8th and 11 here, and let's start separating who's really going to be able to keep up. Don't keep sitting until that guy's on top of you, and now let's go. It's too late. You gave it back. You gave back the advantage. So, the art to riding a speed horse is, yes, to establish control of the race, establish the lead, and then at some point, rip the race open. What are we doing here? Like, win the race at the 8th pole. I remember riding Desert Code going a mile and an eighth at Santa Anita. He wanted no part of a mile and an eighth. That morning, it looked like there's 5 speed horses in the race, and he had sprint speed. David Hoffman said to me, I think I'm going to scratch him. I thought maybe if we could get it soft, and I was like, no, David, that's going to work in our favor, because every other rider is going to look at the race saying, it might have been a mile and 16, I might be misspeaking, but it was a mile and 16 or a mile and 8, further than he really wanted to go. They're all going to be saying, wow, there's so much speed, and Desert Code's a sprinter, and they're going to take back, they're going to grab, they're not going to want to engage. I said, and I'm going to come out like I want it, knowing that Desert Code wasn't a rank horse. You could ride him out of the gate and give everybody else the impression, like, I'm going. So you don't even let them entertain the idea of going. And I convinced them to run. And he went off 6-1 in a 5-horse field, longest price in a 5-horse field, bounced to the lead, and I rode him out of the gate. Everybody else is taken back behind me. I'm a length in front, a length in front, a length in 3/8 pole. And I told David what I was going to do. I said, I am going to open up as much as I can from the 3/8 pole to the 8th pole, and then we're going to have to slide to the wire. We're going to, you know, try to beat the throw. And you can go back and look at the chart. I think it was the Affirmed. I was a length in front at the 3/8 pole. I was 7 in front at the 8th pole, and I won by a length. And the whole field was 5 in front of me, a 16th past the wire. But the race was over by the 8th pole. I completely pulled, and you could see everybody's like in hand, and I kicked, and they're off the bio. Now everybody's chasing. And because he was fast and got to go a half in like 48, it was done. But that's the art of riding a speed horse or a front runner, not to go to the lead and slow it down as much as possible. It boggles my mind that there's a vast majority of riders that don't understand this. And obviously there are guys that do, but I don't know if Ryan Morse has been throwing any kind of shade. Listen, he was on much the best horse in Santa Barbara. She had, as big as she is, for her to kind of check back over heels at the 3/16 pole, you know, jump heels to angle out to find a spot, and he was fortunate that Adam Biskitza was going left-handed at that moment on Gam's Mission, because he could have stuffed him if he wasn't. And then for her to accelerate the way she did, listen, terrific rider, obviously, but you're also riding incredible horses.
There's no doubt. She was so likely and so much. You know, the best in coming in, at least, you know, the way everybody was looking at the race, that I actually kind of focused on Con Lima, who I thought ran a very courageous and winning race. I mean, let's be honest. You got beat half length, and granted, maybe if Santa Barbara gets clear, you know, comes out from undercover earlier and has a clear path completely, you know, she wins off, you know, by open lengths. But in the meantime, Con Lima acquitted herself beautifully in here.
Well, no, she absolutely did. And Flavie and Pratt did all the right things. You know, put her on the lead, got it an easy enough pace. She tried to kick on, turn it for home. She opened up a length and a half and just wound up second best. Higher Truth ran a tremendous, you know, effort. I think, you know, if when you really look at the race, and when I watch replays, I watch every horse individually. So, you know, 8-horse field, I'm going to watch this race at least 8 times before I come away with any clear opinions or judgments about the race. Plum Ali should have been much, much closer. Yeah, she just, listen, we love Joel Rosario. He's a tremendous rider, but sometimes he takes horses back too far. Did I lose you, Steve?
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good post-Triple Crown Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebeck.com, a terrific, wake of Andy calling for the change of the Triple Crown last week, he was absolutely thrilled by the performances of the top pair on Saturday. He was really impressed. I mean, to the point he reached out to me to talk about it. And it is unusual that we get to Belmont and it ends up being, you know, at least, you know, from a Figs standpoint, the best performances of the Triple Crown campaign of the season. 109 Beyer for Essential Quality, 108 for Hot Rod Charlie. And yes, the, you know, when you get a pair of horses, in fact, had this comment that came out yesterday on Twitter that I responded to affirmatively about, you know, two horses pressing each other and extending each other. And I think you got that from these two. And yesterday, all indications actually that they both, you know, popped out of it very well, Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie. So for these two to be a dozen lengths clear of the Preakness winner and Known Agenda, it gives you, you know, gives you a pause. I mean, that is a sizable gap, and it's one of the reasons that, you know, the Fig is what it is, because, you know, granted, not everybody is going to take to the 12 furlongs, but I mean, for these two to be, you know, what was it, 11 and change, actually, 11 and a half lengths out ahead. And Andy will talk about the figure-making part, because, of course, there was the Brooklyn earlier in the day, but, you know, nobody's going to pretend that, as well as Lone Rock ran, that, you know, that his number, based on the clock, was going to be what these two ran. And it kind of shows you what the racetrack was doing as the day went on. So Andy will explain that. It's actually probably a very useful comparison between early in the day. I mean, the Brooklyn went off, I think, earlier than 2 o'clock, 1:20, 1:22 post time for the Brooklyn. So there was 5 hours plus, almost 5.5 hours between races, and it shows you how the racetrack, you know, can change. And all things, you know, this is one thing, and I'm sure Rich Migliori is going to join us today, and Andy Serling will join us tomorrow. They can talk about this too. The fact that we had the kind of weather that we had and as much water as the racetrack took, the track played fair. I mean, I think it didn't hurt to be, you know, on or near, but that's always true at Belmont. But the track was not completely, you know, there was no, I didn't hear a lot of grousing about, you know, speed favoring and this and such. I mean, usually when you're squeegeeing that racetrack, there's potential, you know, that you end up with a bias for a day or two. But they were harrowing. I mean, even on Friday. I mean, obviously there was the extra rain, but they were harrowing, you know, early, and it was obvious on Saturday morning that the track was going to get to fast pretty quickly, and it went from muddy to good to fast in fairly short order. So we got a pretty fair racetrack all in all. You know, certainly I mentioned that New York, and we'll get back to Friday's action. There we go. You know, as part of it. Sorry about that, folks. That I think we're pretty sure that was based up here in terms of losing connection. Sorry to wrap up so unceremoniously with Rich Migliori, but we'll have Rich close by at hand here upstate. So we'll resume, and we've got plenty to do over these next 45 minutes, and that includes Jimmy Ryerson, who's going to join us next to congratulate Jimmy on his 1,000th career win. We've got Christy DeBernardis from TDN. Get a sale preview in. The horses are racing age sale today, and it should be very interesting, because if you saw Christie's preview, there's some very nice ready-made horses. I mean, obviously, we talked about Stiletto Boy extensively last week, and I'm still hoping to get Mr. Kerber on here. But anyway, we got the sale preview with Christy, and then we'll talk to Eddie Keneally as well, as Eddie wins his 1,000th race in the United States or North America. I'm sure he's won a race or two at Woodbine over the years, right? Imagine. Good question. Either way, while we wait for Jimmy, I can give you a quick overview. We had nice, did all racing on Saturday, and then yesterday, I figured this was our last chance to kind of do some things. Although, you know, the Monday, Tuesday, you do get the Monday, Tuesday, you know, dark days now. Makes it a little bit easier to get stuff in. But Tina and I went on a marauding trip yesterday through Vermont. We went out to Wilmington, to our favorite flea market. Then we continued on to Brattleboro. And then we went up the West River and swung around to Manchester to go see our friend Drew at Manchester Hot Glass. And it's Tina's birthday week, so... You know, we gotta put on the dog when it comes to celebrating Tina's birthday. Right now, we're gonna put on the dog for Jimmy Ryerson, who joins us on the heels of the Del Cap win on Saturday. Jimmy, congratulations!
Steve, thank you very much.
I told people and those that follow on Twitter. I know that's not, you know, it's not one of the things you're involved in. But I put out the note on Saturday after the race, you know, that when Jim Ryerson wins races like the Del Cap, we all win. And I should send you some of the replies. So many horsemen chimed in about how, you know, delighted they were for you, and you know, speaks a lot to you know, your reputation and how well, you know, how well liked and admired you are in this game.
Well, that's very nice. Of everybody.
Going in, talk a little bit about, you know, about Miss Marissa and the, you know, the approach. I mean, she's kept good company, and she, you know, won the Black Eyed Susan as a 3-year-old last fall, and it feels like, you know, the season is really, you know, still in front of her.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're so thrilled with her victory in the Black Eyed Susan. And we tried a spot after that in New York, and things didn't go well. She kind of got a little bottled up in the trip that day and didn't run a race down on the fence. And but that's uncharacteristic of her. She threw in a bad one. And I thought her race in the ladies was pretty good. The track, I think it was against the bias. The track was real dead and slow, and she just got beat, and it was a pretty good race. But we had all intent to give her a break after that, and we did. And I thought, you know, sometimes you give horses a break, and this happens, that happens. I can't ever remember having a horse not miss a beat from the time I stopped her. We gave her some time, brought her back into training. Everything went great. And I really liked her in the first race back, but she got beat. She ran very well. The race did her a lot of good. And then we had two options, either the run in the Delaware Handicap and see if we go a mile and a quarter or wait, you know, here to run in Saratoga in the first race here. We chose, you know, the Delaware Cap, and it all worked out,
To say the least. And you know, she was controlling this on the front end, and she doesn't have to have the lead, but it certainly, you know, it certainly looked like the way Centeno, you know, had her in hand. I mean, that she was just very comfortable, and honestly, Jimmy, on the backstretch, it was very clear that she was going to take some beating. You must have loved the way, you know, the splits were popping up.
Yeah, it was a little, actually, you know, You almost worry at that point. I hope he's not, you know, throwing her down too much. But, you know, she seemed very comfortable down the backstretch, as you said, and probably even more so than coming by the grandstand the first time. I was a little concerned, but then she did seem very comfortable down the backstretch. And then, as you said, you knew that it would take a little bit of beating mid-turn to home for her, you know, after getting away with that. And that's how it worked out.
How much progress, I mean, how much different do you sense she is, you know, now after, you know, since January? I mean, that, you know, she's still a four-year-old, and let me see, in terms of she was a February foal, he's had enough out of an arch mare, so, you know, there probably is still some developing going on with her.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you hope when you stop them at three to four, that it's just like 2 to 3, especially, but 3 to 4, you hope that you can make that, you know, that jump, because, you know, the 3-year-old fillies are out of ground. The numbers and the times are, you know, there's a good bit of separation from the older mare. So you have to really hope that you mature, get stronger, and you can make that jump, and that's what you hope for when you give her a break. And as you know, both races so far, it looks like she made a decent jump, and I think she's put herself closer to some of the top ones, you know. And you know, we'll have to see down the road how close we are, I guess.
You know, it's interesting too, and it hadn't occurred to me until you just talked about her development. I mean, for people that don't realize, this was her 16th start, and that's since September of 19. And really, this was more or less, you gave her a bit of a similar break from February of last year to June, but I'm sure a lot of that was COVID related. And, you know, it does feel like, you know, the way in which everybody's had to deal with, you know, the past, let's call it 15 months, 16 months, that she actually is a horse that kind of benefited a little bit, it seems, from the oddity of last year.
Yeah, I think that last year, the break that she got, we were running her 7/8 there, and you know, they, you know, at one point, and her races were okay, and then we gave her a break, and we came back, and we ran her on a turf, and she showed some speed. She's always been a horse that's been a little difficult for me to win first time back off the layoff with, but I think in both these breaks, she's come back second time to run good. She won at Mama second time, and then she went on a 3-race winning streak, and she won here a second time. And we'll see how it goes. But yes, I think the COVID thing helped her, that break there. This break we planned for. And in both cases, I think also going the two turns last year, was a majority of that, but she made a huge jump last year from the Monmouth race to the Saratoga race. I mean, in terms of buyers and just a lot of your numbers, she just ran so much faster, and now she's been able to kind of, to, you know, probably get herself close to, you know, even doing better than that, I think.
It's very, very clear looking at both with whether you use buyers or whether like I'm looking now at her Thoroughgraph sheet, you know, she had made a very nice jump to the two in the Obeya, and she even improved on that. So she basically has put herself squarely, and plus the fact that this was a mile and a quarter, she's put herself squarely in the distaff realm. I mean, she's, and I know it's a heady group, and Latruska, you know, right now feels like the gorilla, but this was a shot across the bow in the distaff division.
No, it's very exciting, And sometimes it all works. It proves sometimes that it all kind of works out, you know, your plan.
On that topic, I mean, let's talk about, I'm sure we talked about it after the Black Eyed Susan, but this was an $11,000 purchase.
Yeah. I mean, Alfonso and Antonio Sano, he helped, you know, transform in Florida, you know, they try and find, you know, good buys, and Alfonso, he oftentimes gets lucky. Yes, listen, you know, good horses can come in, you know, all shapes and sizes and all price ranges. You know, it really doesn't. That's what's great about this business, to tell you the truth, to me. And it's also fun when you work for people, you know, and they, you know, it sometimes with, you know, in some other people's eyes, limited, you know, acquisitions or whatever, but it still, it doesn't mean anything, you know. It's the horse and, you know, how you prepare and what they get out of it, and she's a perfect example of that.
Well, and one of the funny things is just one of those oddities. You know, obviously Bonnie South was taking all the money and was 1-2 in here. And the funny part about this is that as nice a resume as she has, she doesn't want any part of Miss Marissa. She sees Miss Marissa in the paddock and she freaks out.
Well, that's so far. You know, I mean, the first time that was a troubled trip for the Bonnie South, and maybe I think even more so than the second time. You know, where the, of course the pace is so slow and she gets a little bottled up. But I mean, you know, so far we have it over her, but we don't. You know. I have all the respect for Bonnie Sale and Brad and, you know, his handling of her. So, you know, I wasn't, if she stayed home the other day, you wouldn't have found me too unhappy, but we were fortunate enough to beat her.
Well, this win puts you in a nice position, obviously. And, I imagine, I mean, considering her performance, in that allowance race, you know, at Saratoga last summer, personal ensign, the next goal.
Yes, that
seems the natural.
I mean, we're definitely hoping everything works out, that we're able to lead her over there for the personal ensign, and that was the plan if we ran well, and hopefully we were able to carry that out.
Well, got to feel good to go down to Delaware and win a Del Cap. I mean, this is one of those nice races on a career resume, Jimmy. That you know, nice to get that trophy. This is a, you know, it's a historic race.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been a great race for years, and you know, we're really thrilled to be able to win it with Miss Marissa.
I want to fold in a quick Centeno point, because that's his third time with her. She was together for the Black Eyed Susan, was on her for the Obeya, and you know, he seemingly, as accomplished as he is, it doesn't seem like he gets the attention. Maybe because he generally is operating at, you know, on the B circuit at Tampa and in a place like Delaware and during the summers, but he's very accomplished.
Absolutely, and he really has gotten an affinity with this filly. I mean, so we're going to see down the road in terms of you know, what's available, if Danny's going to be able to, you know, fit into our plans with her, but I think we're so happy with the results, and if you watch these races, he has such a feel for what she wants to do on each particular race. Have been so much so different, so you know, and he's done, you know, he's had a great career, and when I was at Monmouth for years, early, you know, a good many years ago, we got to know one another, and We had a little luck then, and we're having more luck now, but he certainly does a great job.
Well, and for you, you mentioned, of course, the years in Jersey. I'm going to ask you about the starter allowance runner coming up opening day at Saratoga, and also what other prospects are coming along. But since you mentioned Jersey and the medal flight days, I got to ask you, have you had a chance to read Bill Mayberry's book?
Billy sent me a couple of chapters. he sent me a couple of chapters, and I read it with my friend of mine, Jim Homewood, who works on the starting gate at Belmont, and we got a kick out of some of it. I haven't seen the whole thing. Yeah, Billy's a great guy, and it's very interesting. There's some funny parts to it.
Well, he's had a fun life. He's probably actually beaten the odds to be in a position to write a life story book.
Yes.
We'll get Barbecue Bill, our friend Barbecue Bill Mayberry, partner in Carolina Barbecue with Barry Fry, and I can't tell. I'll let Billy tell it this summer when he comes to Saratoga to talk about the book. But he had so much fun being around you and Metal Flight and you know, later with Unbridled Song.
Yeah, that was a great time. The quest of the winning the Flamingo. I mean, that winter down there, we all kind of lived together, and the build up for that day was fun. It was long, and it was fun.
A good time had by all. So we'll look forward to that with everybody. The book is Slow Horses and Fast Women. The Bill Mayberry story. Jim, we're getting ready for Saratoga Thursday, and Rosie Holiday, a horse you plucked from Michelle Nevin. This is an exaggerator filly, and ran good on first time on the turf, then disappointed a little bit. And when you ran back, tell us where you are with her.
Yes, she really threw a clunker, and the last time, but I think a lot of it was due to she acted up in the gate. And I think kind of, you know, just threw everything off that day. And then I think Louie, you know, I just don't think she settled, and she just didn't run a race. But I think it was all kind of started with having a little bit of throwing a wing ding in the starting gate. So we've schooled her. We're going to give her one more crack. I think she can dirt. I don't know how much better she is on either surface. She can handle the turf based on that first race. We'll run if it was, you know, weather-wise, I don't know how it's going to be. We'll run either way. So, but she's trained well, and we're going to give her one more crack at this level and see how it goes.
Excellent. And what else can we look forward to Saratoga in the early weeks? Market alert?
You know, I have some baby, but the babies, I broke four babies yesterday at the Belmont. I have four that are five, actually, that are, you know, fairly, you know, that have broke ones. I'll probably break them again. And that's what's, to me, I become with some babies with a little promise. I have an upstart colt that can run a little bit. And, We'll see. He doesn't have a name yet, but we'll figure it all out. But Saratoga is it's a lot of fun with the young horses, and we have four or five that should run up here, and 2-year-olds, and we're excited about them. And we have a mix of older horses that we're bringing from Belmont that, you know, some will fit, some may not, and we'll figure it all out.
Well, we'll watch for a two-year-old upstart, everybody, under Jimmy's name. No name yet. And then I suppose I asked about Market Alert. You ran in the Stallion series after a really good effort in the Mike Lee. And of course, there's the New York Derby, which is next week. What are you doing?
I think, I'm a little... I may go like dirt only in the stay and the race they have here, the stay and race on the turf. I may go there dirt
okay.
only. I'm not so certain. I was lucky enough to win that with Lou Bash as a two. What's the name of that
one? Oh, the for the 3-year old. It's
yeah, the 3-year old race. And it's a mile on a turf. But I may go in there dirt only with Market. Other than that, he's a two other than New York bred against Olders or some 3-year old New York bred stakes here. But we'll figure that all out. There's not any real exact plan for him. But he's after last race, we're going to stay away from the turf with him.
Very good. Well, Jimmy, you come to Saratoga with a Del Cap winner on the shed row, and she'll be in the front stall, and look toward the personal Edson. Look forward to seeing you this week, and congratulations. Just absolutely
thrilled. Thank you for having me on the show.
Not
really
at all. Jimmy Ryerson, everybody. Can't dote on Jimmy and say enough nice things, because he's done an amazing job for years, and absolutely is as good as anybody out there. Let's stay here. We got a little less than 30 to fill out the morning. It's been obviously chock full, and they're less than 30 now away from starting at Newton Paddocks, and we've got the action in the Horse of Racing Age sale today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. The first yearlings go under gavel. Christy DeBernardis, ready for action. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm great, and here we are. We got some ready-made horses. We've got some brood mares that have got babies by their side. Give a quick synopsis of today's action.
Well, we're starting things off at the breeding stock sale, which, as you know, is obviously new. They've had some dispersals at July in the past, but it's not something we do every year, and this one was inspired by a dispersal as well of a group of mares bought to support the Stallion Far From Over. So it's just about 55 mares in the catalog, about 15 or 17, I think, the dispersal is comprised of. So there's a, it's interesting to see mares coming into the market in July with their foals by their side. It's not something we see very often. So, nobody really knows what to expect going in. So I guess we're going to see what happens going forward there. And obviously the highlight of the day is going to be the Horses of Racing Age. And this is a sale that I think a lot of owners have come to point to, either to pick up fresh stock going into Saratoga and Del Mar, or to, maybe cull some of their stock as their two-year-old crop starts coming into training. But I think there's a lot of unique opportunities for the buyers here. I mean, we have a horse that just won the Iowa Derby by over 5 lengths and ran a pretty big number in Stiletto Boy. Another horse coming off a pretty big win at Iowa is Josie. You have a grade 2 winner in Fearless, who's the son of Ghost Zapper, with just tons of upside, going forward and just in his pedigree. This is a horse that could go on and win some races and maybe be a stallion for somebody. You've got a half-sister to Midnight Bisou, who, whether she runs on or not, obviously has broodmare value for whoever picks her up going forward. There's a 2-year-old that just finished second in the Bashford Manor, who's still a maiden. So, obviously, tons of upside on that horse. And you get plenty of unique opportunities, such as John Oxley selling a significant group of horses. That's a pretty nice program for somebody to pick a horse up from. And Godolphin. And this year, Godolphin has kind of turned their focus and are selling 3-year-olds instead of older horses, because they have over 100 2-year-olds coming in. So I think there's just tons of opportunity and tons of upside to the seller and the buyer.
Christy, back for just a second to the dispersal and the situation involved, and you mentioned the connections tied to Far From Over, who died yesterday, and it had suffered, a paddock accident, and how What was the chain of events here? The way this unfolded, that, you know, to have had you know, this stock consigned, and was it related to, you know, to what transpired with Far From Over? What I the whole thing is a little odd.
Yes, my understanding is that they bought these mares to support the stallion. He was injured, and injured significantly enough that clearly they were unsure if he would make it, never mind it was pretty much decided he would not be able to breed. So they needed to get rid of this group of mares, and now it appears he's succumbed to his injuries in the meantime.
Okay, because the chain of events, became obvious that that there was some, you know, there was some unfortunate circumstance. So basically, it was a very interesting scenario. Honestly, a dice roll. I mean, he himself was a, you know, was certainly a nice horse. He's a Blame, and Mrs. Matz had bred, and you know, had a pretty nice. You know, he himself had a nice enough career, and I don't know. The whole thing is one of those oddities. All right. Well, horses are racing today, and some people are going to get some ready-made horses and stake winners. We talked. It's so funny. Last Tuesday when I came back from vacation, we took me one of the first people I had. First person was Doug Anderson to talk about Stiletto Boy, and he's the one who let it. I hadn't looked at the catalog. He's the one that let us know that Stiletto was going to go through the ring, and then of course John Kerber, you know, days later he wins the Indiana Derby as well with his other 3-year-old male. That's a crazy story.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing actually. Talk about timing, also.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 6 days apart, you had two brood mares, and you went to Dialed In and Shackleford, and you win the Iowa Derby and the Indiana Derby. That's why it's the greatest unscripted drama in sports because you don't know.
What keeps us all in the game, right?
Exactly. Let's get a glance, and this is certainly an interesting day of horse trading, but look ahead to tomorrow and Wednesday, Christy. What is your sense? And talk about the first crop stallions on display as the first yearlings go under gavel.
Yeah, I was going to say that's always the highlight of this July yearling sale is the Fresh and Sire showcase, as Stasic has dubbed it, where, you know, we've seen a couple of their weanlings, but they're not always brought to market. Now we're going to start seeing the first yearlings, how these horses are developing from weanling to yearling year. Obviously, the most exciting stallion that has the first yearlings this year is Justify. Everybody's going to be looking for him. Coolmore holds a pretty strong hand because they also have Mendelssohn. And I've heard some pretty great things about the Mendelssohn babies, and I've seen several of them myself. Spendthrift has Bolt de Oro, More Spirit, and Free Drop Billy, all coming out this year. And obviously, Bolt has been pretty highly supported by both his owner, Mick Ruiz, and Spendthrift. So they are giving him, for sure, every possible chance. And we've got Always Dreaming with First Yearlings and Tappet, two Triple Crown winners from that season. You know, obviously, Sons of Tappet have gone on to do some pretty sensational things, such as Constitution. So it'll be interesting to see if Tappet can follow in his footsteps, so to speak. And Lane's End's got the first yearlings for West Coast. I mean, Flatter has been such a consistent stallion himself, I think a bit underrated. So it'll be interesting to see what his son can do and carry forward. And then you've got, you know, all of our regular faces, so to speak, who are having some good years. I mean, Honor Code obviously just had the Suburban winner. And then you've got Gun Runner and Practical Joke and Mohe Men coming out with two-year-old runners. You've got Classic Sires and More Than Ready, the late Malibu Moon. We have some Arrogates, and obviously they're not making many more of them. And Ghost Zapper, going back to the Freshman Stallions, another exciting one I forgot to mention is Good Magic. I mean, obviously Curlin knocks it out of the park every year, so that's one of his most accomplished sons, and Cloud Computing. So actually we have all three Triple Crown winners from that year, represented with their first yearlings this year. So it'll be interesting to see who forges their way to the front.
You know who else we should fold in? And there hasn't been, and I probably should go back and look at how his weanlings did. But Accelerate has got is pretty well represented in the catalog.
Mm-hmm. Another one for Lane's End and City of Light.
Yes, as well. And I just kind of thumbing through, see who else we, more Spirit after the. Mm-hmm. Right after the delayed start, and you mentioned Practical Joe, Sharp Azteca with his first babies.
Yeah, he has first feeling. Mm-hmm.
He's got quite a few in there, actually.
Practical Joke and Unified and Gunrunner, obviously 2-year-olds this year, and Mohey Man, but they're all four of them have kind of already pushed their way to the front of their class in the first 2-year-olds, so that should boost their yearlings coming into this, you know, next season.
You've also got, and I'm personally kind of very excited because I've got a second crop Motown. We've got Volterine had and he is like a lunatic. Motown's first baby, and go as yearlings. The weanling numbers were very good for Motown.
Well, and Uncle Mo's sons also have, you know, been following in their father's footsteps, so he's got every opportunity for sure.
I have not done, the book has been here for a few weeks, and I have not done the kind of pedigree work I probably should do, but is there a hips to watch top of mind that you want to alert?
Well, you know, this sale is not as much known for the big pedigrees as it is for the freshman sires. So it's also a sale that relies heavily on the physical, the yearlings that are just ready to, you know, pop out on top physically and go this early. So I think that's a sale more of standout physicals than anything else. There is a half sister to Bourbonic in here who won the Wood this year. So that was one of the, you know, well, more well-related horses, I guess is the way to say it. But I think it's more of a freshman sire and physicals that are the standouts here where a lot of the bigger pedigrees get held on to for Saratoga and Keeneland.
True, but this will be our first, kind of our first flares,
our first
as
look
it were.
At the market.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, we had a pretty strong 2-year-old market, so that should hopefully trickle down into the yearling market. That's usually a good indicator. You know, these guys have made money and they have money to come back and spend. And I think July is also a sale where you see a lot of your strong upper-level pinhookers come to shop.
A couple of names that did catch my eye include the Hip 229, a Spitestown colt out of Mom's Deputy, who, of course, got Mom's on Strike, who was very good. And there's a Tappet filly that I imagine is going to be notable in here out of Great Hot, the nice stakes mare that and she's produced some winners already. Just a couple of names that just thumbing through. You've also got the family.
Yeah, they have a half to the filly Calypso that's been running very well for Baffert. She's got a couple stakes under her belt.
Oh, yeah.
After her in here.
How about 151, the Factor Colt out of Evensong, the half to Dream Shake?
Yep. You know, I think that's another interesting angle at this sale is these horses that are running well now, trying to scoop up some of their siblings before they really go on to the next level and become harder to buy.
Well, Christy, who's the coverage team? Who we gonna be watching for tweets from you and who else?
It's gonna be me and Christina Bosanakis.
Ooh, okay, nice. the little sea boss on the scene. Terrific. Well, we'll be watching. Yep. We'll be watching for both you and her, and should be good. Any Galileo reflections before I let you go?
Oh, I mean, you know, what can you say about Galileo? I think Kelsey actually said it best in our headline. He is a breed-shaping sire. This is the loss of the legend. He changed so many things in this game and in our bloodlines, not just in Europe, but here in America. I mean, on the broodmare side, on the runner side, he's just going to be pretty hard to replace. I mean, obviously, Frankel is doing a good job too. Fill his shoes over at Judmont and carry on his legacy, but you know, it's just like losing APND over here.
That's a good analogy. That's a good analogy. It's well done. Christy, I appreciate this. Christy DeBernardis, everybody. And, of course, the TD coverage, TDN coverage will be exceptional. And that'll then feed right into Saratoga and Keeneland. So we'll be rotating. And are you coming to Saratoga this summer?
I will definitely be there for the sale. I'll be in and out.
Excellent. Christy, thank you for this. I appreciate it, and we'll be reading and watching.
Thanks so much, Steve. Have a great day.
Christy DeBernardis, everybody. And you can, if you don't follow Christy, you should. And it's, let me see, because I've got the, I've always got to check. Because they've all got their own little nuance. C. DeBernardis, TDN. Everybody's got the TDN at the end of the name. But C. DeBernardis, TDN, to follow Christy. Following Christy, we're looking for Eddie Keneally, and to close out the mornings. So Casey is efforting Eddie, who got his 1,000th career win. And so I'll just vamp here. I got plenty of stuff I can slip in until we find Eddie Keneally, who in addition, I'll say it before he even gets here, in addition, of course, to Eddie's terrific career and you know, the nice horses he's managed over the years, he's also had a very influential role in bringing other young horsemen, you know, to the U.S. and help them start their careers. And he's admired for that, as well as, you know, as his training successes. So, you can praise Eddie on a number of fronts. It's pretty cool, though, to look at, you know, to look at a career record, 5,905 starts, 1,000 wins, $42 million in earnings. And His first starters came in 93, and it took about 6 or 7 years to kind of really get into, you know, into a flow. And Eddie's never been somebody, though, interestingly, he's never been somebody that's had, you know, huge strings of horses. He's always had, you know, a couple hundred starters, 300 starters at the most, actually. His high was 2012 with 358 starts. But much more typical is the 250 to 275 in a range. That's really been more, and he, you know, 50 to 70 wins a year for 20 years, pretty much, 15, 16, 17 years. So, I mean, Eddie's had a terrific career. I want him to. To flesh out the, it's one thing for me to, you know, to keep telling you how wonderful his career's been, but I want to hear from, we got to hear from Eddie. So as soon as Casey's writing to me now, so maybe he's got him. He needs 3 minutes. All right, that's perfect. No problem. All right, so we'll get to Eddie in about 3 minutes. He might be at the sale, actually. To be honest, that wouldn't surprise me if Eddie's perusing bloodstock as we speak. All right, so while we do that, I can do two things. I told you about going, yeah, we went to Vermont. That was terrific. And, oh, the new barbecue. Holy cow. Got the new barbecue. We 3 straight nights in a row and into Saturday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Straightforward barbecuing to get going. But then that rotisserie. Did I put up a picture? I don't think I put the video up. I sent it to Chuck. I sent it to Johnny. I put the chicken on the rotisserie. Holy cow. It's pretty neat. I marinated it for, I don't know, it was more than overnight, actually, because the weather was so lousy. I wasn't going to go stand there in the rain. So I think it marinated like an extra 12 hours. You put the thing on there. It's frankly a lot of work. It's a bit of a potchki, as we say in Yiddish. It you know, and then you got this giant skewer. You've got this, you know, this Diego Montoya kind of an instrument. Hello, chicken. You killed my father. Prepare to die. So you skewer the thing, and then you secure it with these prongs. And I'm not going to do a single chicken. I'll do two next time, because the thing kind of shrinks down. Anyway, it 90 minutes later, the thing was gorgeous, beautiful. Beautiful golden brown, and so yeah, we're gonna have I know that charcoal users are disappointed in me that I would end my association with charcoal cooking and move to gas, but listen, it was Tina's. It was Father's Day present. She pushed she said you should have a nice, you know. So now that I got it, I'm going to utilize it, right? I'm going to make some ribs. I'm looking forward to doing the ribs on the rotisserie thing. So, a lot of fun. All right. No Eddie yet? Come on, Eddie. Not going to have enough time to give all the details of his brilliant career. How about this? How about a quick rundown of the Texas stakes the other night? Lone Star. How about the Valor Farm? She's our fastest. You know, you name a two-year-old, you name a horse, she's our fastest. You know, she's much older now, but Scott Gelder with this six-year-old. But when you name a horse, she's our fastest. That kind of gives you an idea. Wins the Valor, the Fiesta, Miss Perfecta for Steve Asmussen, and Tyree Walensky and Jose Silva Jr. How about in the Futurity? This for the Phillies, a Grade R filly for Carl Moore, Karen Jacks, Trains, Streak of Silver, not to be confused with Silver Streak. And then in the Philly, on the Colt side, a My Golden Song for Hirsch and Sanders. That means Brett Calhoun won it. Indeed, he did, with Ray Lou Gutierrez. Tengo Mis Papeles and Kanai Bob won the Assault. And Sunlit Song was the 3-5 favorite, got beat on the square. Luis Quinonez aboard for Francisco Bravo and owner Michael Grossman. There you go. Shackelford, another Shackelford. Amazing. Shackelford off, gone, and he has two nice stake wins over the last 10 days. Well, okay, Casey got Eddie, but... Eddie had to put him on hold for a second. All right. we got about 5.5 minutes, which is actually probably just enough to have this discussion. But Eddie's got to get back on the line. There he is. I hear him now. Eddie Keneally, congratulations. 1,000 career wins.
Steve, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Not at all. And I've been tracking this because Gary Siaka is right behind you. Gary is 4 wins away, and he was, you know, the two of you have been, you know, moving, inching closer. And so I tuned in to watch He's Pretty Lucky. And boy, between Brian Hernandez and He's Pretty Lucky sticking his neck out, he didn't want to get past. It's like he knew that he was win number 1,000.
Yeah. Got it done anyway. you'd obviously like to get it done maybe in a graded stake or something like that, but you know what, we'll take it. We'll take the claimers just as well as we take the allowance or the stake horses, so just so happened to be a claiming race for this occasion. But I happen to own part of the horse, so at least that made it a little bit more special as well.
Well, we're going to talk about those potential wins at places like Saratoga in a second, because you got starters on both the first 2 days of the meet. But Ed, reflect a little bit on your career, the 2 decades plus in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, we took us a little while to get going. When I first started out in '93, we always had a pretty small stable, maybe 10 or 12 horses for the first, I would say, for the first 10 years or so. And, you know, we started in 93, but it was like 04, 05, 06 before we started getting some larger numbers and better caliber horse. And then Bushfire came along, and she so happened to be the first and only filly that had won the Grade 1 Ashland Mother Goose and Acorn in the same as a three year old filly. It hadn't been done since either. And yeah, so that kind of got the whole thing going in a bigger momentum, and things started to move forward a whole lot quicker after she showed up.
Well, and I, as we were reaching for you, I made note that you never have been an outfit that was interested in having 150 horses. You've always had a set amount. You've sent out basically the same amount of starters, more or less, for the last 15 plus years, and they've had the consistent amount of winners. I mean, it seems like you want to have just enough horses to put your hands on and to keep your eyes on.
I totally agree. I mean, we certainly could have more horses if we wanted to. We try to keep it at two barns, 30 at one barn and 20 or so at another. So we typically fluctuate right around the 50, few less, few more than 50. For the last 15 years, I'd say that's kind of the number we've had. And it's held steady, and that's a comfortable number. I don't want to have horses at three or four different locations. I think two locations is plenty for me.
And Eddie, we're going to run short on time today, but we'll catch up at Saratoga probably. I'll sit you down in front of me live. But there's also the aspect, not only have you had ongoing success, with all different kinds of horses, actually, short, long, turf and dirt, you've also gained a reputation as somebody that helps people start their careers, and you've brought over any number of young people, particularly from Emerald Isle, that have gone out on their own. And what you've done to help people, I mean, you could have just as easily retained some of those guys and started extra strings, but instead they've gone out on their own, and that's an admirable trait, training people to go out and have success.
Absolutely, and we encourage that. And with the people we have working for us now, we encourage that too for my assistants to spend the time and do as well as they can, and then the goal would be to eventually go out on their own and have success. We've had some good people come through the operation over the years, like you say, Brendan Walsh, Irish. Tom Morley is doing quite well also, Englishman. Yep. And we've had a few other people, too, that have worked for us over the years that have gone on to do their own thing. So that's satisfying for sure.
Well, and we'll talk about, next time we get together, we'll talk about, the Kelly's Landing and Braidster and Custom for Carlos, etc. But a quick hit for Thursday and Friday, you've got Point Me By on opening day in an allowance with Tyler, and then you come back with Mused and Javier Castellano on Friday. Quick thoughts about starting the meet right at Saratoga.
Yeah, I tell you what, we're watching the weather. We're hoping the races stay on the turf Thursday and Friday. I think we've got a good shot of staying on. We've got two live horses. Point Me By Thursday, just broke his maiden very impressively. First time out at Churchill for a good purse, and was very professional sprinting. I think he's not only a sprinter, I think he's maybe as good or better going long. So we're running him a mile in his second start. Distance shouldn't be a problem. I think he'll be forwardly placed, and he'll be right there. I know he's lightly raced compared to the rest of the field for the most part, but he's a quality horse.
Eddie Keneally, everybody, and you can follow Eddie on Twitter. And Eddie, can't wait to see you later this week, and continued success. Your first 1,000 in the United States.
Well, Steve, I appreciate it, and we're looking for 1,001 already, and hopefully we will carry that momentum forward.
Eddie Keneally, everybody, does just a tremendous job. Follow him at Keneally Racing. Two N's, two L's. Keneally Racing, everybody. Thanks to Eddie. To Christy DeBernardis, they're 1 minute from reading conditions at the sale. Jimmy Ryerson, Rich Migliori, Mark Cassie, Sid Fernando paying tribute to the incomparable, the incredible Galileo. And There you go. Your Monday. Lots of good racing, actually, today. Lots of good options. And we got a busy week ahead between stakes at Canterbury, Indiana, and then, of course, Saratoga at Del Mar and Haskell. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody, right here, Sirius XM at the races.
Great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.